The committee will come to order. Representative Case, would you do that?
So moved. I have read them thoroughly and totally agree with everything that's written in those minutes. So Representative Cass moves the minutes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Welcome. Would you state your name for the tape? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Robin Kinney. I'm an assistant commissioner with Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'll have a very small part of this program today, but it is our honor to be presenting to you some background information on some unique programs that we've been doing at Minnesota Department of Agriculture for many, many years. You know, today is the first official day of National Agriculture Week, and it is time for people to note the importance that farming does play in our agricultural food and the economy here of the state of Minnesota. You committee members already know all of that, so we won't go into those details. But there is traditional agriculture, and there continues to be global demand for Minnesota products. Today, we are delighted to be looking at locally grown foods that will help us meet the demand of our neighbors close to home. Minnesota grown and organic produce are just a couple of the program examples we hope to highlight this afternoon, where consumers can find products grown with pride by Minnesota producers that are finding their way into growing numbers of local farmers' markets, niche markets, and being displayed at grocery stores. I marvel at this amazing industry and the ability of our staff at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to provide not only our producers, but our consumers with what they want. Minnesota's agriculture is truly an amazing industry. Two important components guide and focus our producers, that of profitability and environmental sustainability. We're pleased today to highlight a couple of our programs that are addressing the wants and needs of our consumers. You will hear from three key staff, Paul Huguenin of our Minnesota Grown Program, along with our Sustainable and Organic Agriculture Program staff, Mary Hanks and Meg Moynihan. They will also be joined by a producer from Napa Valley, Mr. Gary Paul, who will share some of his thoughts. Minnesota is an amazing industry. We think this committee is an important committee, and we thank you for letting us share our story today. With that, I'd like to introduce Paul Huguenin of the Minnesota Grown Program.
Let me see if anybody has any questions for you first. If not, thank you. And say your name for the tape, please.
Madam Chairman and members, my name is Paul Huguenin. I coordinate the Minnesota Grown Program at the Department of Agriculture. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today to provide an update on the Minnesota Grown Program and the things that we're doing with local foods. Membership in our program is at an all-time high. We have 950 farmer members who each pay the $20 annual license fee to be part of the program and to use the logo. And something that makes us unique is the requirement to leverage our appropriation with private funding. We do this through license fees, advertising revenue from the directory, and by cost-sharing activities like television ads with producer associations. One of the questions that we often hear from people is, why don't we see the Minnesota Grown logo on something like Shell's beer or Hormel pork? Well, with the requirement that 80% of the product needs to be grown or raised on the farm in Minnesota, in the case of Shell's, it would mean that they would need to source things like Harley and barley and hops from Minnesota farmers and to be able to document that. So a company like that wouldn't be eligible to use the Minnesota Grown logo. But I do want to note that our division also has programs specifically for food processors. They do things like help them go to regional, national, and international trade shows, as well as put on trade missions. The new Minnesota Grown directory is just about ready to go to press, and this directory will go to press with a record number of farmer listings. We've already broke the 700 mark, and we'll continue to take listings for the next week or so, right up until we go to press. I wanted to note also that the advertising revenue from farmers who list in the directory, as well as organizations that advertise in the directory, will pay for nearly all of the cost of printing all 185,000 copies of the directory. The slide that you have that you're looking at now is the actual slide that we used 2 years ago when we came before the committee and we asked for an increase to our appropriation. And so for the rest of my time with you, I'd like to share some of the tangible results that we've been able to do since that time as well as our plans for some new exciting activities that build on results so far, some things that you can look for in the coming year. The first of those priorities was to increase our presence in outstate Minnesota. One of the ways we've done that is to pay for advertising outstate Minnesota. We worked on the radio front. We worked with Minnesota Public Radio because that puts us in a lot of communities that are outside the reach of some of the metro-based television stations. We also advertised on television stations in Rochester and La Crescent, Minnesota. As a state agency, all of our advertising is put out for bid, basically, and so we'll have another request for proposals this spring. We'll be entertaining suggestions and proposals from radio and television stations. So we expect to expand our footprint in outstate Minnesota in the coming year. I wanted to give you an idea of one of the messages that we play on Minnesota Public Radio. This one aired this fall.
Programming is supported by MinnesotaGrown.com, home to the Minnesota Grown Directory, a statewide connection to orchards, wineries, and pumpkin patches for local foods and fun. MinnesotaGrown.com, helping Minnesotans buy local and eat fresh.
So that's one of the ads that we put on Minnesota Public Radio to talk about the directory. The tile ads that you're looking at, the one on the right-hand side of the screen was on NPR.org. The one on the bottom part of the screen was on KTTC.com, the TV station in Rochester. So along with putting television ads or radio ads on those stations, we're always coming in and doing things on their websites as well. Here's the second way to boost our exposure in outstate Minnesota. One that we're really excited about, and here's how it works. Our program will print 5,000 custom copies of the Minnesota Grown Directory for each of the media partners you see at the bottom of the slide. They get to put their logo on the front cover, and they'll also have access to use the other cover pages for their advertising. In exchange for us providing those directories, they do the distribution of them in their local area, so at things like county fairs, home and garden shows, and at local businesses, and they give us a free advertising schedule on their station. So the bottom line is that we end up with more directories in outstate Minnesota, we end up with a media partner, and we end up with more advertising to help create awareness of what Minnesota Grown is and how people can buy locally in their community. The second item on the list was to do more at retail. And I've got three things that I'd like to highlight in terms of how we're doing that. One of the ways to help motivate produce managers and sets of personnel is by sponsoring sales and merchandising contests. The ad that you see on the screen is from last fall with Cub Foods, where we sponsored their fall Apple Fest. You'll notice the Minnesota Grown logo in that ad, along with the picture of the farmer in Elgin, Minnesota. It's an effective way to motivate store employees to do more in terms of point-of-sale material and to make sure that Minnesota-grown products don't get lost in the section. We already have one scheduled actually starting in April with Bushel Boy out of Owatonna. We're aggressively pursuing other partners around the state. For example, next week I'll be traveling to St. Cloud to meet with the representative from Colburn's Cashwise. We've made contact with Super One Foods on the range. And we expect to also be able to work with organizations like Hy-Vee across southern Minnesota. So what you're looking at is a model that we think we can replicate in a number of other stores around the state. One of the most proven ways of increasing sales and consumer awareness is to actually put our fresh produce in people's mouths. Once they get to taste how fresh it is, we know that that's the best way to convince them to buy that product and to make a lasting impression. The challenge is that it can be expensive, and so we've stepped up to help our producers by being willing to cost share the store fees and the labor charges that go along with sampling in store. We've done this for a couple of years with the apple growers in Minnesota and had good results. Now we're able to offer that to any one of our members regardless of what product they have. So they can use these funds in grocery stores or restaurants. We've got several people that have signed up for it already for 2009, and we expect to have several more that sign up as we enter spring and summer. The third unique thing that we've done is we've started to develop a photo library of Minnesota-grown producers. Basically, we'll send a photographer out to the farm to take a picture of the farmers in their field with their products. And then, in turn, those get used by retail stores who want to make custom point-of-sale materials. They want to highlight the growers they're buying from. And by having the resource of that farmer photo available, we're able to help them be effective at branding those things as Minnesota Grown. In this case, this was a photo of Paul and Gary Gray in Clearwater, Minnesota with their potatoes. Lunds and Byerly's printed these signs. They actually did them for 20 different producers that they're purchasing from. And so when you walk through their produce department, you'll see signs all over the department with the producer and with the Minnesota Grown logo featured prominently on them. One of the things that I want to emphasize is that as a program, we need to remain flexible in how we deal with retail chains. Because each one of them has a different way that they want to conduct these local foods promotions. In the case of Lunds and Byerly's, they make their own point-of-sale material. And so we need to work with them and make it easy for them to do that. Other stores will use our point-of-sale materials, and they're happy to put up our signs. The local food marketplace at retail is changing and changing dramatically. One example of that is that 7 years ago, one of our members invited me to go with him on a tour of Walmart's distribution center in Tomah, Wisconsin. At that time, he was going through the process of becoming a vendor for Walmart. And so I went on that tour, and one of the things that I learned was that at that time, Walmart had a very strict policy that prohibited their local produce managers and store managers from doing any sort of custom signage that would identify where that product came from. And so 7 years ago, they couldn't do really anything with us, even though they were starting to buy some local products. Well, if you fast forward to 7 years and you look at the world today, not only are they buying from a lot of our producers, but they're designing and printing their own point-of-sale materials that use the Minnesota Grown logo, and they're putting them in all of their super centers that sell produce. And from the list there, obviously they have centers throughout Minnesota. But it's again, the message is that we need to remain flexible, we need to be able to adapt along with retailers if they do that. To help our members utilize the logo on packaging, we can cost share that cost of adding it to a bag, a box, a label, however it is that their product gets to market. So we can reimburse them up to $200 for doing that. The benefit of that is that that logo is always there. We don't have to depend on overnight stock staff in the produce department to make sure the signs are with the right product. If that product gets to the grocery store, it's going to have a Minnesota Grown logo, and the customer will always know that that's from Minnesota. I think one of the best examples of that is what Bushel Boy Farms has done. This coming year, they will have 1 million tomato packs. So anything they put in plastic clamshells has the Minnesota Grown logo prominently on the front of it. They'll also do another 500,000 lettuce leaves for their new live lettuce product and another 300,000 basil leaves, all of which have the Minnesota Grown logo prominently featured on the front of them. So right there, because that company has demonstrated their belief in our program, we've wound up with 1.8 million impressions of the Minnesota Grown logo at virtually no cost to our program. So we're excited about that piece of it. To help support our retail promotions, we do television ads. And all of our television ads now feature our spokesperson, Carrie Tollison. She's an Olympic runner and a native of Dawson, Minnesota. The picture on this slide is actually the October 2008 Runner's World magazine. And that's Carrie on the front cover. An inside article in the magazine interviews Carrie talking about local foods and how important it is for athletes to watch what they eat and the benefits of eating fresh local foods. The ad that I'd like to show you is one that we run in July and early August, basically at the peak produce season in grocery stores.
As a national champion and Olympian, Carrie Tollison knows what it takes to compete with the best in the world.
Training on the gravel roads of Minnesota's farm country, I saw how hard farmers work to provide us with the world's best food. Minnesota Grown produce harvested today can be found in your local store tomorrow. Look for the Minnesota Grown logo for the world's freshest peppers, sweet corn, green beans, tomatoes, and more. Minnesota Grown, world-class produce fresh from your neighbor to you.
The newest ad that we have that promotes grocery stores was filmed last fall, and it runs in November, and it encourages people to go to their produce department seeking Minnesota-grown apples. You'll notice in the ad we also go out of our way to mention the varieties that were developed by the University of Minnesota. We tried to have a little fun with this one, as you'll see.
Hi, I'm Minnesota Olympian Sherry Tollefson. Nothing beats Minnesota-grown Honeycrisp and Harrelson apples, developed right here by our University of Minnesota. These apples taste best when they're grown in Minnesota. They're fresh, juicy, and exceptionally crisp. Now that's world-class crisp. Ask your grocer for Minnesota-grown apples and apple cider today.
In addition to grocery stores, we're seeing a real surge of interest from restaurants and chefs who want to buy local foods and they want to buy them direct from the farmers. To help facilitate those relationships on a local level, we've sponsored a series of workshops in conjunction with a nonprofit called Renewing the Countryside. And the idea behind it looks a little bit like, you know, what people would talk about with speed dating. So these are farmers and chefs that get together in a room. They make the rounds, they get to introduce themselves to each other, and hopefully by the end of the conference we've developed some relationships that can continue. In addition to doing a couple in the metro area, we've tried to put a focus on being outstate Minnesota, being regional, and we've been everywhere from Lanesboro to Bemidji. It's an effective way to make those personal contacts, because so much of that world comes down to trust between the grower and the chef of the restaurant. Effective marketing today requires smart use of the internet, and this is something that we didn't have before we came to you for that appropriation 2 years ago. Since that time, we've had very effective results from a pay-per-click campaign on both Google and Yahoo. What you're looking at is an example of a person who went to Google and searched for Minnesota wine. And amongst the results that came up, the top result on the page is actually our ad for the Minnesota Grown Directory and the 17 wineries that are included in that directory. When people click on the ad, they go to minnesotagrown.com, and they're able to find their local winery that way. One of the things that I like as a marketer about pay-per-click advertising is that you pay when people click on that ad, but if that ad shows up and they don't click on it, you don't have to pay. So it's a very targeted ad, and it's one of the rare forms of advertising where it's easy to measure results and it's easy to match up expenses with actual consumers getting into your product. We have ads customized for virtually every product in the Minnesota Grown Directory. And what you're looking at is just a snapshot of some of our campaigns to give you an idea of the number of people that we bring into the directory. That winery ad brought over 20,000 clicks into the MinnesotaGrown.com in 2008. The most popular ad we have is the one for apples. But we have, there's another probably twice this number of ads, and all of them are effective at bringing people onto the website to make it easy to buy local. We are almost ready to launch a brand new website that will make some pretty dramatic improvements in the online Minnesota Grown Directory. For producers, they'll be able to upload a photo of the farm or a farm logo. And for consumers who use our directory, they'll find a lot more options that make it easy to map, get a map to the farm. They can sort, they can search geographically. It's something that we're real excited, and we look forward to the opportunity to let you folks know when that's live and ready to look at. The third priority area that we asked for support with was in the area of our point-of-sale material. Since that time, we've developed several new items, including what you're looking at is a very large pumpkin that has our new pricing sticker on it. Basically, it's just a Minnesota-grown sticker that deliberately has room so that the farmer can write a price on it. We've gone through about 250,000 of those since we introduced those less than a year ago. We also developed twist ties so that people who sell produce in bags can put a branded Minnesota-grown twist tie around their product. It also has room for people to write a price or whatever else on that twist tie. The last new item that we developed is actually a function of country of origin labeling. The Minnesota Grown logo satisfies country of origin requirements for fresh produce, but that doesn't stop retailers from occasionally asking growers to go beyond that. So we got a call from one of our members last fall, just before he started shipping pumpkins, and he said that his retailer was requiring him to label them with product of the USA. So we turned around and we printed laminated cards of the Minnesota Grown logo, put the tagline product of the USA on it, and we were able to have it to them in time to get those pumpkins shipped into stores. It's an example of how we need to be flexible, listen to our members, and to be able to act quickly when necessary to help them maintain their market and develop new markets. Demand for our items has increased pretty dramatically over the last couple of years. In fact, it's nearly doubled from 2007 to 2008, with now well over a million items with the Minnesota Grown logo per year. What's most exciting for us, though, is when we look at our first 2 months of 2009, well over double the first 2 months of 2008. So we're on a pace to shatter all the records for that. All of our point-of-sale materials are free to our members as well as to retailers. We're willing to go out of our way to make sure it's easy for stores to use that logo. And that card at the bottom, that is the card that we produced for that grower so that we could get product to the USA on there with Minnesota Grown. I'd also like to include just a note about a couple of areas where we've seen tremendous growth in the area of local foods: farmers markets and CSA farms. The new directory that's about to go to press will have well over 90 farmers markets in that directory, by far the highest number we've ever seen. A colleague of mine in the division has been very helpful in working with markets that want to, or with people who want to start new farmers markets. And in fact, she works with farmers markets to help them develop their own association, the Minnesota Farmers Market Association, so that they could educate members about items uniquely important to farmers markets. There's now over 50 markets in that organization, and they do workshops a couple of times a year in various locations around the state. The other item I wanted to highlight is that this coming weekend is a minority farming conference in St. Paul, and that will be attended by somewhere between 100 and 200 immigrant farmers, primarily Hmong growers or Somali growers. And it's an opportunity to reach out to them and let them know what the resources are that are available to them, like the Minnesota Grown program, but also to let them know things they need to know about food safety, about pesticide handling, so that they know where they can turn to get their questions answered, so that they can do things right. The second area of dramatic growth I wanted to talk about was Community Supported Agriculture, or CSA funds. And what I'd like to do is show a clip from Twin Cities Live earlier this winter. Twin Cities Live is a weekday afternoon show on KSTP TV Channel 5. And I just pieced together the very front end of that segment as well as the end of the segment. And at the end, you'll hear them talk about a pretty groundbreaking study that we're involved with Health Partners.
Welcome back to Twin Cities Live. Did you know there's a way that you can have the best food on the farm delivered to your door every week, all spring and summer? And even though it's middle of winter, now is actually the time to start thinking about it.
Yeah, it's called Community Supported Agriculture. I love it. It's CSA for short. And it's a great way to support local farmers, plus get tasty fruit, veggies, and more. Paul Huguenin from Minnesota Grown is here with the inside scoop on CSA.
Excited.
I love CSA. I'm really excited.
Okay, so we got the CSA and the Community Supported Agriculture out. But what exactly is this, Paul? How does this work?
A CSA is a farm that sells its harvest in the form of shares or memberships. So if you joined a CSA, what you would actually get is a weekly delivery of whatever the farm is harvesting that week. So in most cases, that means you'll get about 15 to 20 weeks of fresh produce. Sometimes it includes meat or fresh cut flowers, but always fresh produce.
On the same farm every time?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
So you basically are investing in that farm, right?
That's exactly right. And that's why you actually buy in to a farm this time of year. They go out and they plant according to how many members they've got. So it's a great way for the farmer to know what they need to grow and how much of it. And it's a great way for a consumer to know, hey, I know where my produce is coming from. I've got it lined up for the summer and fall. One of the things we're doing is working with Health Partners, and they're doing a study through their research foundation to try and measure and quantify exactly what those health benefits are.
Wow.
Because you think you get this much fruits and vegetables over the course of the summer rather than going to the grocery store and maybe spending that same money on candy canes. Probably not over the summer. But over the summer buying all the candy stuff, I imagine that the health benefits got to be pretty major.
Yes. They've done some preliminary studies and the numbers come back really encouraging. And by doing that, they can actually quantify what it costs to insure you.
Wow.
And so if they can verify that when you eat more fruits and vegetables and if you do that through a CSA,
potentially.
We'll be excited, we'll be excited to see those results. Yeah.
This
thank you so
great.
Much for being here.
Thank
Paul.
You. My
great
pleasure.
To see you.
My pleasure.
Great to see
this is fantastic.
You want to sign up for a CSA?
I
you
do.
Can pick up the Minnesota Grown Guide to find a farm near you.
And you can also find a link to Minnesota Grown on our website. Go to kscp.com and click on Twin Cities Live.
The Star Tribune followed up that story just a couple of weeks ago on March 5th, and they had an article about CSA farms in general, but also about the Health Partner Study. And the quote that you've got on the screen is from one of our colleagues there, Marcus Tigerson. The last line is what gets my attention, and that's what makes me especially excited about this study. That's good for members, it's good for employers paying health care costs, and it's good for society. Depending on the results of this study, if they come back strong, this could have a tremendous impact and create tremendous market opportunities for Minnesota farmers throughout the state. And while so far everything that I've shared with you today has been about local foods, I wanted to emphasize that we also work with growers of plants, trees, shrubs, and flowers. And I wanted to share with you our newest television ad that promotes real Minnesota-grown Christmas trees.
I love the way a real tree makes the whole house smell like Christmas. But finding a real tree is a whole lot of fun. I'd like a gold mountain. This year, make sure you get a real Minnesota grown tree. And make some memories with your family. Find your tree farm or lot at MinnesotaGrown.com.
Carrie's still waiting for Santa to fill that request. But we're optimists. Finally, I'd like to transition to MDA's Sustainable Ag and Organics program by introducing the newest version of the Minnesota Grown logo. It's for farmers with certified organic products. There's no extra cost to utilize this logo. In other words, if a farmer is already a member and they're already licensed to use the Minnesota Grown logo, the only thing they need to do is send in their paperwork that shows that they, in fact, do have certified organic products. Again, this demonstrates, I think, our ability to react to market needs, to work with producers, to help them, to help give them tools that they can use to create markets and help them access retail markets as well. With that, I'd like to invite Meg Moynihan to share a little bit more about the specific organic programs that she works with.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Huguenin, first of all, is that a Finnish name?
It's actually French.
Oh, well.
From the Huguenots.
I'm on a theme today. But I want to commend you for this program. I think it's very valuable for the promotion of Minnesota agriculture. And what I wanted to do was to comment that you see around here, we have Reese's and some other cookie and candy products. But even this can be locally influenced. This is from the Hershey Candy Company. The lactose in much of the Hershey chocolate comes from this district in Litchfield.
Just a point.
Any other questions, comments? Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for what you're doing. I really support that, and I think it's great. But when the governor gave his State of the State address, he introduced a program where schools are supposed to start buying together in bigger and bigger pools. When I talked to my superintendents and my school people about that, they said that is going to possibly prohibit or at least discourage them from buying things local, including food. Has anyone from your department had that discussion with the governor's office about the negative impact that's going to have on agriculture and buying from local farmers?
Madam Chair and members, that's not a particular case that I have heard anybody mention to me, and I do think it's good that you brought up the issue of local foods and schools, because it is an area that's full of opportunities as well as clearly some challenges. We're involved with a number of organizations and producers that are trying to increase the amount of local foods in school districts. There have been some pilot cases around the state of Minnesota. We're actively working with the School Food Service Nutrition Association, and we're talking to them about ways that we might be able to help them buy more local products. For example, providing access to Carrie Tollefson to do some custom point-of-sale material, perhaps bringing Terry into the schools to talk with kids about how important it is to eat fresh, healthy products, and that Minnesota farmers are the best place in the world to get fresh, healthy products. So local foods in schools is a topic that we're actively working on, but the specific question you asked is not one that's come to my attention yet.
Any other questions? Senator Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Huguenin, for bringing this program along. And in the half dozen years that I've been a member of Minnesota Grown, I've seen a lot of progress, and I think it's something that we can all be proud of. My question, and I don't know if you'll get to this maybe later, about the farmers markets and the farmers market nutrition program. I noticed in your slide it said you had 290 vendor participants, and my question is there an additional effort to get more farmers to participate in the farmers market nutrition program?
Madam Chair and members, certainly the department is always eager to bring in more farmers to that program, because the more options that the recipients of those vouchers have, so the more options they have when they go to the farmers market, the better redemption rates we get, the more satisfied those individuals are going to be, and the more dollars we'll see flowing through markets and into the local economy. So yes, the department is always looking to bring in new vendors to that program and into those markets.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, you did a great job.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Say your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Meg Moynihan, and I work as the state's organic and diversification specialist at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And Madam Chair and members, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Paul described in the last portion of his presentation the new Minnesota Grown Organic logo that is coming out. And he and I and other people that I work with in the organic sector are very excited and think that this really will resonate with Minnesota farmers, Minnesota consumers, and even those who are outside our borders, and perhaps even internationally, because we sell our organic products grown here in all those different kinds of venues. My objective today is to give you an overview of the status of organic agriculture in Minnesota and some of the important things that we're doing at the Department of Agriculture to support Minnesota farmers and the consumers who are interested in buying Minnesota products. We have experienced very consistent growth. We use a variety of data sources to keep track of the number of organic farms in Minnesota. It's important for you to know that those farmers are not required to register as organic producers with the state. We use the data provided by USDA's Economic Research Service, in which I have a great deal of confidence. And when those numbers are slow in coming, we use our own estimates through the efforts that we expend at the Department of Agriculture trying to keep track of all of the growers in Minnesota, making sure they know about our programs that, for which they're eligible, and other educational offerings that we have. You can see that the last count, which was just this week, has us at 630 certified organic growers in the state. And that puts us, I cannot tell you specifically what our ranking is, we are definitely in the middle of the top 10 nationwide. This slide lets you see a bit more of the distribution of organic farms, and you certainly can see the proportion you have in your respective districts. One thing I will say is that organic farms in Minnesota look very much like their neighbors, depending on the part of the state in which they're found. For example, in the Red River Valley, we find large-scale cash grain organic farms. Quite a number of those sell ingredient products, oil seeds, grains. Many of those exports, and some of those farms can be very large. They can be 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 acres, and they're the kind of farms that are managed within an inch of their life, and the people that work on their farms have shirts with their names on the pockets, and they're very orderly, and nothing slips through the cracks. Through the middle part of the state, our dairy belt, we see a tremendous number of organic dairy farms, and that Stearns County, which is colored so darkly, indicates a high proportion or high number of organic farms. Most of those are dairy farms. Around the Twin Cities, we see smaller acreages producing specialty crops for specialty market, lots of direct sales. And then in the southeast part of Minnesota, we see mixed crop and livestock farms. Again, a lot of livestock. That's a part of the state that's very well suited to organic livestock production. national standards for organic agriculture have been in place only since 2002. And they established a national organic program which oversees the implementation of these standards. And they really codify and emphasize a systems approach to agriculture that emphasizes ecological and biological principles. And they apply to the production of crops, the production of livestock, food processing. So it's not enough just to grow food organically. If it is a processed product, like the cookies that you are snacking on, which are produced by a company called Country Choice Organic in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, they must also be processed in a certified organic facility. There's a category that I did not add, and that's wild harvest. There are also some guidelines for wild harvest of things like maple syrup and mushrooms and things like that. The standards specify the practices that are expected and or required, and they also specify the practices that are prohibited. And a general example of that is that most synthetic materials are prohibited in organic production. Not all, but most. Certification or verification of a farm's organic status is overseen by third-party certifiers that predate the organic standards. There was organic certification before we had national standards, but the USDA chose to use this existing network of certifiers to accredit them and ensure that they were meeting the... that they were conversant with the rule and applying the rule fairly. And so they are accredited, and a farmer in Minnesota may use any certifier that is accredited by the USDA. Enforcement is handled, because this is a federal rule, it is handled at the federal level by the USDA and also by those accredited certifying agencies, which have quite a large amount of leeway to monitor the activities of their clients and investigate complaints. Minnesota was an early adopter of organic agriculture, and by that I mean our farmers were early adopters, but also as a state, we had an organic statute as many as nearly 25 years ago. In 2003, the legislature adopted the federal rules by reference so that there wasn't a lot of mix-up and we weren't in a dogfight about whose rule trumped whose. We do have a section that specifies a number of responsibilities for the Commissioner and the Department of Agriculture, including promoting opportunities, addressing obstacles, I'll talk a bit more about those in a few minutes, conducting activities like education and marketing, research and development, identifying needs of the organic community, and trying to avoid duplication of efforts. We have a lot of partners with whom we work on these efforts. Appointing a Minnesota Organic Advisory Task Force, which is a 14-member panel that advises the commissioner about the department's activities and what our priorities should be, and our obligation to report to you, the legislature. I'd like to share some specific examples of activities that we do at the Department of Agriculture. One of the most visible is an annual organic conference, Organic Farming Conference, which is held in St. Cloud. The department has coordinated this conference for about the last 5 years, and attendance is growing each year. We find more enthusiasm, wide range of participants, people who have been farming organically for many years, as well as folks who are just getting started or are thinking about organic. And it is very much an educational conference. We also offer a trade show, and our vendor slots sold out both this year and last year. Last year we got everybody off the waiting list, and this year we had a few disgruntled people whom we didn't get off the waiting list. But our turnout, as I said, has been growing, and this year we counted between 425 and 450 noses attending the conference. And so we're very excited and think that demonstrates the enthusiasm about this sector. Another resource, it's the purple one up there, kind of toward the left, is the Directory of Minnesota Organic Farms. And this was a project that was started with some federal funding a couple of years ago and proved to be so popular with farmers and with buyers, large-scale buyers, brokers, feed mills, ingredient sourcers, that we're trying to do this every couple of years or every year. And in fact, are just accepting applications for the directory now. And it is intended not to be a direct-to-consumer directory like the Minnesota Grown, but, again, to those buyers who purchase in quantity. And we even have farmers who are using it. For example, in an area that's hit by drought, we have farmers that use it to find their fellow farmers in areas that are having a little more hay production that year to purchase hay and other products. the Minnesota Grown Directory, which Paul described, also has a demarcation for organic products, and I think there are, I counted this morning, 32 farms listed and selling organic products, having those available. We have a Minnesota Organic Network that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture helps to coordinate, and that's an informal link among people that include farmers, researchers, extension educators, agency personnel, who are all doing various things in organic agriculture and want to touch base and coordinate. The time, the energy, and the resources are few, and so the more we talk to each other, the more we get done. We have an important role in that. The book that has the little corn plant coming out of it is a project that came out of a legislative hearing when Senator Dill asked me some very pressing questions about the economics of organic agriculture that I could not answer. And I turned to the USDA Risk Management Agency, which awarded us a sizable award to create a program to enroll Minnesota organic farmers in the existing Farm Business Management Program. And this is a program that is of long-standing, highly regarded throughout the United States, and helps producers identify the farm business management aspects of their farm and to improve those and track their data. We found that the organic farmers were sorely underrepresented in that pool, and so offered some incentives and scholarships to defray the cost of enrolling. In return, they received information on their own farming operations, but their information was fed anonymously into a pool of organic financial and farm performance information so they could do some benchmarking and kind of assess how they were performing and how their enterprises were performing in comparison to others. The pamphlet over toward the right is an example of a professional development opportunity we offered, again with some funding provided by the federal government and some partners here in Minnesota and also in Wisconsin, to offer organic dairy training for dairy professionals. We were hearing from dairy support professionals, vets, feed suppliers, other resource people, that they were getting questions about organic dairy farming, and nobody had ever taught them about organic dairy farming, so how were they supposed to answer those? So we created a professional development opportunity for them. I mentioned several times during the last slide other partners, and I want to acknowledge that there are a number of other organizations that are doing important work in Minnesota and are important collaborators for us. One of those is the University of Minnesota, which has had long-standing agronomic research on certified organic land at Lamberton. They now have certified organic land at Wasika and are transitioning part of the organic dairy herd at Morris to organic, which will provide a very unique perspective in terms of dairy research in the United States. The Natural Resources Conservation Service has a program that offers incentives, financial incentives for farmers who are transitioning to organic because they recognize some conservation benefits in the practices. The Risk Management Agency offers crop insurance to organic farmers and has funded quite a number of our special projects at the Department of Agriculture, looking at risk reduction for organic producers. The Farm Service Agency, also a number of nonprofit organizations, and the certifiers themselves are an important source of information and support for these organic producers. One of the most important things that we do for ourselves and for those partners that I just mentioned is a survey every other year of organic farms in Minnesota. The last one we conducted was 2007, and we sent a survey, a 30-question survey, out to 532 farms, and we had 209 usable results, and those were farms that we were fairly confident were certified organic active farms. And that was a response rate of 39%. And I have to say that these producers are very good sports with a number of surveys that roll across a farmer's kitchen table. It's kind of a blessing when they choose to fill out yours and return it. Our goal is always to learn about their experiences and their outlook and what the challenges are that they are facing. And we use that information both within the agency and we share that with partners so that they can prioritize what they are doing. The 2009 survey is currently underway, and I counted the number of surveys in the basket. We sent it out. They received it March 1st. It's March 16th today, and we have 200 surveys returned. So I'm looking very forward to learning about how we've done in this intervening 2 years. I picked out a few demographic characteristics that I thought might just pique your curiosity. One of the things that concerns those of us who work in agriculture is the graying of the farm population, and wondering where the next generation of farmers is going to come from. In 2007, according to the National Ag Census, the average age of a Minnesota farmer, organic or non-organic, was 55.3 years old. And this slide is from the 2007 Organic Farmer Survey and shows us that the good news is 44% of our organic producers are below the age of 50. We do have about a third who are between 50 and 60, so I'm counting on those experienced producers to guide in and shepherd the next generation. But it seems like a healthy population pool. We also want to know what makes these farmers tick. Why did they choose this extremely difficult, extremely challenging production system? And we find that they have multiple and complementary reasons for doing this. They were allowed to choose more than one category, and as you can see, most of them did. Price premiums and the prices that they can earn in the marketplace was their leading reason. But look at the health and safety concerns that they have. Also, their interest in environmental and conservation, natural resource protection. And the one that excites me the most, or interests me the most, is that question about personal satisfaction, about job satisfaction, and just the simple fact of I enjoy farming this way. It's fun, it's rewarding, I like it. And I don't think that any of us can argue with that. On the topic of price and profitability, no farm can be sustainable in the long run if it's not making money. One of the questions we're curious about is the cost and profitability of organic farms and what they think about that. And their opinion was split on the topic of production costs. A large chunk thought that their production costs were lower. Perhaps some of the inputs or products that they use are lower. But about more than half thought that they were about the same or higher. So there was some difference of opinion there. But at the end of the day, about 75%, nearly three-quarters of them, said that they felt that organic farming was more profitable for them. They also tend to be an optimistic bunch. Getting back to this, who's going to be doing our farming in the next coming decades, we asked them if they thought they or a family member would be farming in 5 years, in 10 years, or in 20 years, and you can see their responses there. Lots of them. In 20 years, 55% say that they'll still be producing food for us. We also asked them what their biggest challenges are, and here I broke these out by category. And what crop farmers told us were people that identify themselves primarily as crop farmers, those who identify as dairy farmers, and those that identify themselves as fruit and vegetable farmers. I will tell you that right now the first two categories of farmers are bigger, and there are a number of items that appear on all three lists. Contamination from genetically modified organisms and the pollen of those is a concern. For crop producers, production volume, not having enough for their buyers, or perhaps some weather-related problems that cut down on their production. Labor appears in a number of the categories, and the cost of labor and the accessibility of labor. Drift, one of the things that we do at the Department of Agriculture is help pesticide applicators learn about what it means to be organic, what the organic farmer's requirements are to prevent contamination of his or her farm, and what they can do as pesticide applicators to reduce those risks. Some information about price transparency, and in a couple of cases you'll see seed pops up there. Organic farmers are required to use organic seed with very few exceptions, which is actually another opportunity for our producers in the state to produce certified organic certified seed. One important mechanism that helps us collectively address challenges like the one you saw on the previous slide is a unique partnership of public agencies whose leaders have formally signed a Minnesota Memorandum of Understanding on Organic Agriculture. This is the only state-level MOU that we're aware of, and it started with five signatories. It was reauthorized last spring and now has 10 public entities, including the University of Minnesota, University of Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station, College of Agriculture, the MBA, the DNR, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and a number of federal partners, who are all in agreement that there are opportunities to protect and conserve natural resources, expand economic opportunity, and enhance consumer choice. And they have formally signed on to this document and empowered staff to work on these issues, which is a great help to those of us who are the staff. Speaking of consumer choice, one of the issues on everybody's mind, whether you sell cars or you're trying to get people to open bank accounts, is how is my market sector doing in this dismal economy? And so I wanted to address a couple of points on that. We see that organic agriculture is now, or organic products are now in 3 out of 4 grocery stores nationwide. They really have penetrated the market from their early days, as you could only find them in co-ops or a neighboring farm, to in all of the chains and the Walmarts, in the local chains like Lunds and Byerly's, and even available on the internet. The growth has been brisk at about 20% per year, and that has softened a bit in the last few years. But still, according to consumer research groups, 2 out of 3 2/3 of households buy organic products at least occasionally. And in 2006, organic products accounted for nearly 3% of U.S. food and beverage sales, which is quite astounding market penetration over the course of just a few years, when we think that it started at nothing. There are some surprising facts about organic agriculture that fly in the face of conventional wisdom. And one of these is that only rich people can afford organic. And according to the consumer research groups, whose business it is to find out who's buying and why, half of frequent buyers, which means they buy 9 or more products a month, half of those have household incomes of less than $50,000 a year. So for them, this appears not to be a luxury choice, but a choice for which they are willing to pay whatever is required. It is also frequently perceived as something that white people eat, whereas the consumer research indicates that black households, Asian households, and Hispanic households are more likely than white households even to purchase organic products. So I think sometimes assumptions are made that this is only a production system for one sector of agriculture and one sector of consumers, and this information really discredits that. Organic is one manifestation of consumers' growing interest with the way their food is produced. More and more people are paying attention to that. And at the MDA, we think it fits into a larger category called sustainable agriculture. We have a flagship sustainable agriculture program that is recognized nationally, and Supervisor Mary Hanks, who has been at the helm of that flagship for at least the past decade, is here to testify about that program today. But before we do that, Madam Chair, I would certainly be willing to answer your questions or the questions of any members of your committee. Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Moynihan. Question I have, while you one of the screens back, you had several publications that were available, and I was just wondering if some of those publications were available to us on the committee. The one in particular is the 2007 Organic Farm Performance in Minnesota.
Madam Chair, Representative Szymanski, and other representatives, I'd be happy to make any of these publications available. And Representative, since you spoke first, I will give you the copy that I brought with me today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would also appreciate having a copy of all of those. I have several constituents who are really contemplating whether or not to go into organics. My district has a lot of small farmers, and it's either get big or sell out or do something else. And so my question really is, for these people that are contemplating that, do you have historical data on different crops with a comparison of price per bushel, price per ton, whatever it is we're talking about, and yield per acre, all the details of actually making money on a farm? Do you have records with real numbers like that going back a few years so that they can use that to help them make the decision?
Madam Chair, Representative Doty, I think you bring up a very important point, and one of the things I'd like to stress is that when I get calls, such as those from your constituents, of people interested in organic, it's not my role to sell them on it and to try to convince them to be organic, but to help them, as you say, evaluate whether this would be a good system for them. There are some data about production, historical production, It's fairly scanty at this point, to tell you the truth. There are more university-level studies. Sometimes those don't have a lot of credibility with farmers because they say, well, those highly paid research technicians can grow anything. Can I grow it? We're building a body of that information with our organic farm performance project, Organic Farm Business Management, and we're very hopeful to be able to continue that even after our outside funding expires. We're fine for now, but that's something that we understand there's a need for some historical information. I'd be happy to work with your office or any of your constituents to put some tailored packages together and help them look for that information. It's there, but it's spotty.
Thank you. I will probably be directing a few people your direction.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Deacon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one question I had dealt with an earlier slide here, too, that talked about the cost and how the majority of organic farmers said that it costs the same or even higher than the conventional methods that were being used previously. I assume that many of these farmers are farmers who used conventional methods and then transitioned over. What accounts for the higher cost or being the same? It seems to me that there would be a significant cost savings and not purchasing the pesticides and the chemicals and the fertilizers and so on that would be necessary. Just wondering what would be the additional cost that would keep it the same or even higher than conventional methods. And then I had one other question after that, too.
Madam Chair, Representative Eakin, I think if we slice and dice that cost question by category, crop producer, dairy producer, fruit and vegetable producer, we would see some differences. And I expect that the dairy farmers weighted that highly to the it costs more end of the spectrum because organic feed prices were extremely expensive at the time that they were filling the survey out. And so the cost of organic feed was very high. Another factor of organic is that it tends to be more labor intensive, and labor can be a very expensive proposition. So I didn't ask a follow-up question on that, so I can't. Some of my speculation is speculative, but I certainly could get some better information by going back and looking at that question by the sector that answered it.
Okay. Thank you. And Madam Chair,
Representative Eakin.
One other, as far as the number of farms that are organic or not, how many are partially organic? I know I've run into farmers who have some organic acres and then some that they farm conventionally. Is that a significant number of farmers in the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Eakin, we count as an organic farm any farm that has any certified organic land. And you raise an important point that a farm does not have to be 100% organic to raise and sell organic products. There are what we call split operations. And some farmers have an organic enterprise and a conventional enterprise, or maybe transitioning some of their conventional acreage into organic. So how many of the split versus the whole organic we have, I do not know. I will also tell you there's another category of organic producers who are legally considered organic but produce less than $5,000 a year of product, and they do not have to be certified. So they're frequently not on anybody's radar, and those might be people who are small producers or selling direct. They must be in compliance and be able to prove that they're in compliance with the federal standards. It's not enough to say I'm a little farmer who uses a little Roundup, so I'm organic. They do have to comply with the rule, but they don't necessarily have to be certified.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one more question regarding the retail outlets of organic produce, considering that some of it is shipped in from other states. Does the department have any inspection or spot checks on whether the products coming in across our borders are technically organic? Sometimes there's a concern that at the price that their retailers are selling it, there's a little skepticism among the organic growers that how can they buy it that cheap and so forth.
Madam Chair, Representative Szymanski, I'd have to ask our Dairy and Food Inspection Division about the particulars of what they do at the grocery store level. What I can tell you is that certified organic food travels with kind of with a passport. It travels with a certificate that verifies its origin. And one of the benefits that the organic industry touts is the traceability and traceback feature, that you could pick up a product and with very little exception trace it back to the fields in which it was produced. And that's a long-standing aspect of organic production and food processing. Specifically with regard to our inspection role, I'd have to check with our Dairy and Food Inspection Division on that.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome. Say your name for this case, please.
My name is Mary Hanks. I am the Assistant Director in the Ag Development and Financial Assistance Division and also supervise the Sustainable Agriculture and Integrated Pest Management Program. Thank you for spending a beautiful afternoon outside, inside. Tough, we walked over and it was tough to come in the building, so thank you very much for listening today.
Yeah, we should have done that, sat outside.
We actually thought about asking if we could just go out and sit in the grass, but it's a little too formal, for going outside. I'm here to talk about sustainable agriculture. The sustainable agriculture statute is 17.114. This particular statute was part of the Groundwater Protection Act in 1989. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary of the program. What the statute says is that sustainable agriculture is integrated resource-conserving practices that enrich the environment and provide a productive and profitable agriculture. This term really describes a collection of practices and systems with the purpose of protecting the environment, improving profitability, supporting the farmer, his or her family, and their community. Every Minnesota farmer is working towards sustainability. We're not, it's a broad term. Most of us who farm or produce anything are working towards sustainability. Most of us are not there. As long as we use fuel and other things that are not renewable, we're still trying to get there. Part of the Sustainable Agriculture Program also includes efforts in diversification, organic, which Meg Moynihan just talked about, integrated pest management, different conservation practices, and livestock systems. Our program involves a number of different tools that we can bring to farmers. We have a grant program. Again, we're celebrating 20 years of that program. We have a low interest loan program. We offer workshops and other educational opportunities. We do on-farm demonstrations, lots of field days, lots of publications. I brought a whole stack. I don't know if anybody wants all of them, but a number of different kinds. And then financial management. Ms. Moynihan mentioned working with organic producers and farm business management. We also have the same program available for specialty crop growers to get them into the farm business management program. As far as our grant program, 20th anniversary of the grant program and the Green Book, I think you've probably all seen this. I think we send it over to the committee every year. Our grants cover quite the range. It's not all fruit and vegetables and local food. We do quite a bit of granting to grazing and deep-bedded hoop systems, season extension for vegetables and fruit, cover crops, new crops. We have some really interesting projects right now looking at goji berries and bringing some blackberries from further south up into Minnesota. We work with fertility and different pests. We're doing more with energy crops. And always, these are done on-farm with outreach. One of the grant projects I'd like to highlight just briefly, Andy Hart is a farmer down in Elgin, Minnesota. He produces sweet corn and peas for canning. He also does hay and corn and soybeans. His project was looking at how to get cover crops, in this case rye, into standing corn and beans. His idea was let's keep the ground green and covered as much of the year as possible. So as you'll see in the upper left corner, he's been working with flying on rye in August with a helicopter. And you may say that's quite energy consumptive, but if you look at the cost of the helicopter versus ground application, it comes out about even. And this gets it on much faster and more evenly. As in the picture in the upper right corner, that's rye growing in a cornfield. It was flown on in August. This looks like it's probably October, maybe early November. And then down below, what Andy's also been doing is finding a neighbor with beef cattle and bringing the cattle on to graze that rye in the fall and then again in early in the spring. So not only is he keeping his ground covered all winter, reducing erosion and nutrient runoff, but also his neighbor is getting at least two grazings for his beef cattle that wouldn't have been there before. And it saves mucking up his pastures early in the spring. Andy has also, well, that's Andy and his family down in the left-hand corner. We interviewed Andy on the phone just to ask him what he thought of the grant program because he sat on our technical review panel, which is an outside group that comes in to review the grants every year. And Andy had some good things to say.
The grants and see all the exciting things that farmers are trying and trying to prove on, or and a lot of the grants are almost a brand new idea, maybe something that they've heard of on the internet in some other part of the country or maybe even overseas. And it's really exciting to see the Minnesota farmer be so excited about farming and sustainable agriculture and trying different things or trying to prove on something that's maybe worked in even one part of the state. They might be trying to move a little bit farther north. I remember there's been some work on some greenhouses with hoop designs and stuff to be able to almost raise vegetables year-round.
And this is a table that shows just a little bit about the grant program over the years from 2004 to 2009. It's been a very, I think, successful program with a lot of good ideas coming out for farmers to try and then to share that information that they're finding on their own farms with their fellow farmers. We were asked to address local foods in particular and some of the things that we're doing in the Sustainable Agriculture Program related to local foods. Diversification is one area. The picture you see up in the left corner are goji berries. One of our grantees, a Hmong family, are trying to raise goji berries here. They're apparently, I've never eaten them. They're supposed to be really good, medicinal. They're just trying to see which varieties they have will grow in Minnesota, if they'll grow at all. Ms. Moynihan did a really neat CD. It has it's called Diversification on the Air. It has a number of different farmers talking about the different things that they've tried, from flax to berries to bees to farmstead cheese. It's just a few minutes of each one of them talking about what they're doing. And again, this goes out to farmers. It was done on the radio with the farm network. And then also, you know, diversification can happen on any farm. Often, what we're looking at as far as local foods is, you know, new fruits and vegetables like the goji berries, adding livestock to more farms. Sustainability in a lot of ways, we think livestock should be tied to as many farms as possible for that great manure and compost. So we do things like help farmers write grazing plans, talk to people about how to raise small flocks of chickens, just increasing interest in people buying local meats as well as fruits and vegetables. And then, of course, energy crops are another thing that is of increasing interest in diversification. fruits and vegetables, again, are a very obvious thing that we could be doing. As far as season extension, there were three high tunnel workshops done this winter in Minnesota, and all of them were bursting at the seams. Fruit and vegetable producers wanting to know how to extend their season. High tunnels are greenhouses, pretty inexpensive for the most part, but they allow producers to get into the ground early in the spring and then grow later and later into the fall and into the winter. So just the demand for local produce is so high that most fruit and vegetable farmers are trying to figure out ways to feed us good Minnesota-grown food starting April all the way into December and January. We talked a little bit about CSAs in the Minnesota Grown program. We've also done grants and some other things with CSAs. One of the things that we have been doing with fruit and vegetable producers in particular is pest management. We have a number of publications that have gone out, in particular pest management guides for strawberries and apples, with a really nice field guide that includes pictures of all the insects that might be a problem with apple growers, diseases, and then a companion piece that says, okay, if you've got codling moth in your apples, here's what you do. And these were done with money from the Environmental Protection Agency. Mm-hmm. And then we also do surveys of apple pests. Again, there's a market for not only organic, but reduced pesticide fruits and vegetables. And as more farmers start to use integrated pest management, in most cases they can reduce pesticide use. And, there's some great examples. Hope Orchard down in La Crescent, they're transitioning entirely to organic for their apples. They've also put an on-farm processing plant so they can do jams, jellies, applesauce, everything. So they're expanding and diversifying that way. And then again, we work quite a bit in livestock systems, providing rotational grazing planning assistance, lots of work in deep-bedded hoops, pastured poultry, and then pasture improvement. If anybody's eaten at Chipotle Grill, most of the pork comes from Nyman Ranch, which is pork that is produced in deep-bedded hoop systems with limited antibiotics. Their poultry and beef are also coming now from sustainably farms that use sustainable livestock production practices. A couple of the things that we've also done, we have a couple of publications, again, helping people figure out different ways to either do poultry or dairy. Dairy Your Way and Poultry Your Way. We also have a Hogs Your Way, which is out of print. But again, if people are thinking about diversifying and getting livestock back on the farm, there's many, many ways to do that. And these two guides in particular are very helpful. They go through most of the different systems, pros and cons, case stories from different farms, farmers talking about their systems. That was a very rapid little conversation. So if there's any questions for any of us, we'd be happy to take them.
Are there any questions? Representative Dostelsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Hanks. I worked for Extension Service for 14 years, and of course the first question that crosses my mind is, are you guys working together with the Extension Service on some of these publications, which their entomology staff does field guides as well. I'm wondering if there are ways for you to work together to, just make our dollars more efficient.
Madam Chairman, Representative, most of our, like Ms. Hanks or Ms. Moynihan said, we have many, many partners. We worked with Thaddeus McCammon. He's not Extension, but he's from Minsku. helping with those two particular publications. We have multiple projects, grant projects with Emily Hoover, Jim Ruby, many of the extension research people, and again, Vera Krusek, we've done different publications with her. Almost every project that we do, we have a partner either at the university or MNSCU or some other area.
Representative Dostowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was aware of some of those. In terms of producing and distributing and, have you even gone into some of those areas as well with the cooperative efforts?
Madam Chair, Representative Dostowski. If you see the two, the hogs your way, or the poultry your way and the dairy your way, those were produced with the University of Minnesota. They, we went through them as for printing, for layout, for one of them. A number of publications we are distributed through the Extension bookstore. You can order them through Extension. Their Extension is reprinting one of our publications. Well, they were a partner, so they're going to be reprinting it and selling it through the Extension service. So we always look. We don't. There's not a, like Meg said. There's not a lot of money for any of this. So if you don't get together with your partners and make something happen, you can't make it happen by yourself.
Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Well, I'd like to introduce Madam Chairman, Chairwoman, Jerry Paul. Gary's a Minnesota Grown producer and has had one of our Sustainable Ag grants in the past. And he's going to talk to you about what he does.
State your name for the tape. Thank you.
Gary Paul, Apple Valley, Minnesota. Madam Chair and other committee members, I want to thank you for taking the time of listening to us, and I especially want to thank the Minnesota Grown Promotion Group for doing an outstanding job on leveraging our tax dollars as far as how they spend their money and get the Minnesota Grown name out for us producers in the state. I'm a sixth generation farmer, always been in the vegetable business, and always probably will be. I have a couple of kids. Hopefully they take up the reins and in the not-too-distant future, but that'll be their choice. To go over a little things of what Minnesota Grown has done for us in the sustainable ag world, as Mary was saying, we've leveraged a couple different projects on getting the Minnesota Grown name out as far as labeling, winter squash, and different programs that we've used to bring the public more knowledgeable on how to cook, how to prepare things. You would not believe the problem with our generation, and not necessarily my generation, but it gets worse as the kids get younger. They don't know how to prepare anything. So we've used a lot of efforts of putting our logo along with Minnesota Grown logos on our individual pieces, which enhances the consumer to help produce a decent dinner for themselves that, you know, they have something to go off of, and they aren't just shooting at the hip. We've worked with a couple different companies nationally through Minnesota Grown. Matter of fact, I'm going out to Denver, Colorado to speak in Chipotle's locally grown program that they have set up nationwide. Now, you guys don't maybe not realize this, but being a producer in the last couple of years, the locally grown concept has become such a huge thing. And for producers like us to capitalize on this with the help of Minnesota Grown's Department of Agriculture to to help promote locally grown to nationally syndicated companies that come in and they want our produce. Last year we probably sent a total of during pepper season was the main crop that we sent into all the Chipotle stores in Minnesota were approximately about 10,000 cases. And this year we plan on doubling that production. And as far as not only the pepper, we're expanding our habanero pepper selection for them. And we are also working with one of the major retail chains for cut flower production. We're starting off with 2 acres of cut flowers. The produce part of it has kind of propelled the cut flower industry also. And the stores want locally grown. They want to hang their hat on somebody that's a native of Minnesota. They want somebody that has grown up in the area. And we've taken that to this cut flower program, whereas hopefully next year we'll go from 2 acres this year to possibly 20 acres next year, which everything will be somewhat like a bushel boy sleeve where we have the Minnesota Grown label on and, of course, our logo and that type of thing. So I just want to thank you guys for allowing us as producers to enable us to you guys helping us bring our names out to the local chains. And as far as we sell to the Super Ones, the Colburns, the Cubs, and the Rainbows, and with all them people jumping on the locally grown, it has really brought a tremendous need and want for Minnesota grown produce on the shelf, and people I think really appreciate it. So, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? If not, I like what you said. I've always said that these are about 2 or 3 generations now that do not know how to prepare and make a healthy meal. So thank you for saying that. I say it all the time.
One other question that Member Faust, you had made the comment about school districts getting involved in locally grown. I've had one meeting with the St. Paul School District, and I'm meeting again with them next week in implementing a program on how we can bring more Minnesota grown produce into their selection as for the putting food in for the lunch and the lunch table there. So I mean the word is getting out. The members of our organizations are definitely pushing for Minnesota grown produce to be found everywhere, and St. Paul School District is just a start, and hopefully it becomes common practice for these school districts to reach out to their local growers to bring in the produce that they need. And I want to thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? If not, thanks again for coming.
Mm-hmm.
We're adjourned.